You know, the Japanese film industry is one that has done a lot of really important, very influential films that have strongly intersected with the American film industry. I mean, certainly Akira Kurosawa comes right to mind.
Obviously.
His relationship with John Ford and, you know, the Samurai versus Western film, the gangster film.
Yep.
You know, obviously, you know, you think of anime and their influence on animation, all these things. But there's this other darker world of the Japanese film. The so weird that no one else in the entire world would ever even think of the plots that come out in this industry. And that's the type of movie we're talking about today with the new release R100.
Yeah. It's something else. It's, you know, the thing about those movies though, a film like R100, which is a film like R100, where the plot is essentially dominatrix, you sign up for a 1-year contract to be randomly assaulted by dominatrices.
Yes,
that's the plot. Elevator pitch,
as you do.
What's great about films like R100 is that there's this looming phrase or mentality in American cinema, which is, you know, make something original, make something I haven't seen before. You know, this is just a version of something I saw 20 years ago. This is just a version of E.T. And then you get the flip side of the coin with something like R100, where they go, the elevator pitch is a guy signs up to be assaulted at random by dominatrices. and they go on, they explain.
In a special organization that's all they do.
Right.
Let's do that for people.
Sure. And during the course of the film, we see the people screening the film step out and discuss the film itself because it's being made by a director who's 100 years old. And that's the point where the person who initially went, make something I haven't seen, goes, I'm not going to watch that.
Right.
That sounds crazy.
What's, you know, like the only connection point I could find at all was with a French film, Rubber.
Yeah, totally. Same thing.
The only connection I could find at all to this movie, like anything else that this seemed like.
Agreed.
With that sort of like, okay, well, it's a film, but it's also people commenting about that film within this film. Sorry about the cat in the background. I don't know what the problem is there. He doesn't like S&M. But other than that, you're really, truly watching something that is going to be unlike anything else you've ever seen before.
I know. And it's great too because the film doesn't abandon the actual notion of trying to make points and raise themes and do something interesting and actually with some humanistic elements. It doesn't just go pure pulp or pure exploitation with the premise. It integrates the premise in really interesting ways. So when I was leaving the film, I was kind of having a discussion about the scene. It's in the trailer, but the scene that I'm sure you remember where he's walking down the street after the really heavy conversation about the state of his wife.
Yeah.
And the film gets very, very serious.
Which his wife in question is in a vegetative state.
Right.
This is, by the way, Nao Omori, which I'm probably saying wrong, who people probably know from Ichi the Killer.
Right.
One of the truly most memorable ever super weird Japanese films ever by Takashi Miike.
And so he's walking down the street. The score is soft piano. I mean, the film has almost shed any sense of the bizarre. The train goes by. When the train stops, he's being beaten on the ground by one of the dominatrices. However, the little device that they use, the ripple device, when he achieves...
Yeah, they do a little CG effect that looks like a drop in the water.
Right.
But over their faces. And their his face is titled
Get
Distorted.
Catty or, yeah.
I don't know.
But I don't know if you noticed, but that was the first time where his face gets distorted, but there's no ripple effect.
Because, okay, I did not notice.
Well, to me, that meant, you know, he's so depressed by what's going on in his life that he can't achieve pure ecstasy in that moment. And it's a really simple and probably stupid thing, but to me it meant a lot because the film was going, it's more than just chicks in leather beating this guy up.
It's a lot of time I find in films that are done by really quality filmmakers that are making a truly weird film that nothing going on in the camera shot is unintentional.
Absolutely.
And you certainly feel that in this film. That's impossible to quantify what's actually happening in any way you would a standard narrative, certainly, but that makes you all the more look for little things like that. Mm-hmm. And wow, what does that mean? I can't say at the end of R100, I walked away from it going, oh yeah, I totally got what they were going after here. But it does make you want to go back and watch it again to try and get a better grasp on what that might be.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the whole movie was made with really deliberate intention, that everything going on was definitely there for a reason. And furthermore, I felt like the actual technical aspects, the camera work, the composition of the shots, I felt like all of that was absolutely on point, way more than, again, a film with this premise needs to have.
Well, sure, of course, but that's the thing, is that, like, you've got a film that the story is as simple as you said, this guy, ordinary guy, has a kind of a shitty life, and that his wife is in a vegetative state, raising a kid by himself with just the help of his, I was never sure if it was his father or father-in-law. I got the feeling father-in-law.
I think it's father-in-law.
And wants to be beaten by random woman, and that's the plot for two quarters of this. Almost two thirds of this film is just watching a series of scenarios like that, and then building up into total batshit insanity at the end. There's got to be more going on than that, and right. Sure enough, it's clear that there is. I wonder how much of it is lost on us due to cultural differences. I study Japanese film. I study Chinese film. It's very much something I'm very interested in. And I even was still kind of a little baffled by it. There's a point with it, as we said, we see regular points in the film where this group of people who are watching a screening of this film mm-hmm. come out as if there was an intermission into a lobby and discuss why they don't understand what's happening in this movie.
Right.
That... You want to find the most amount of meaning in that, and they say at one point in there, those points in the film where someone randomly says, is that an earthquake?
Right.
That's supposed to be a connection to say that this is a call to what ordinary life is like in Japan. And I never, even that being put out there, I still went, yeah, I still don't get it.
Well, I see, that point actually, where it felt like it could have been exposition, it felt like a challenge to me, where they spell it out, and I go, okay, so that's one thing it definitely doesn't mean.
right, yeah, I was going to say, this does feel like a movie like that, where you're like, okay, if they're telling us it means this, it probably means exactly the opposite.
Because they do it a few times fairly subtly, and then they call attention to it, and then the next time it happens, it's comical.
Right. I think that, on many levels, this is a comedy. It's just a really, really fucked up, for a certain type of person comedy.
I'm that person.
Yeah.
I was cracking up the whole time.
Well, the thing is, I think you liked it a little bit more than I did, because I felt like those first two-thirds of this film, where it really is just him... going through his life, where it's like, okay, life is normal, I'm doing things. Oh, here's a dominatrix, I get beaten for a second, orgasm scene, and then rinse and repeat.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, I get that what you're trying to establish here. This is a normal guy in an abnormal scenario, and here's, slowly, building up why he might want to be beaten in the first place. But that's just it. It's agonizingly slowly. In the third act, things go bug nuts crazy. where this whole organization that he's doing this for, there's an accidental death of one of the dominatrixes, and they decide, okay, we're at war with you now.
Right.
And it just, the movie loses its goddamn mind in the most pleasant way possible.
Sure. Well, it kind of turns into almost a John Waters film mm-hmm. at that point. The CEO specifically is entirely reminiscent of Divine.
Oh my god, yeah, there's this woman, I'm not even sure, I'm looking at the cast here, she was a Caucasian actress.
Yeah, Lindsay K. Hayward.
Oh, okay, who is huge.
Gigantic.
She is so tall and big. She's like, you missed your chance by being too young to have been on Xena the Warrior Princess right. as a villain.
Yeah.
Because you know, she's so big and, like, intimidating yet sexy. You know,
yeah,
for
sure.
kind of a BBW lady. She's like, wow, you're pretty hot.
Yep.
Her whole villainy sequence that turns into a sort of weird Mortal Kombat parody.
Right.
I don't even know what happened there, but I enjoyed the shit out of it.
Yeah. It's funny because the third act, I agree, it's just right around the time the Queen of Gobbling is introduced.
And he said Queen of, not goblins, but gobbling.
Gobbling.
So if you're into vore, the vore porn, well, this is the movie for you.
But I felt like the first two-thirds, I didn't feel like it dragged. That, to me, I enjoyed the longer, more drawn-out Dom scenes. The sushi scene in particular, I was rolling.
Yeah, there's a sequence where he's in a sushi restaurant, and he's, oh, you know, as you do. Man, it really made me want sushi for the
record. It did. It's, I was like, and to go into a place where there's a dude at a bar, you go, whatever you're making.
Oh, when I was in Tokyo, there were places like that all over the place.
I know, and I've never been.
And we didn't go to any of those places that were like the little hole-in-the-wall place like that, and I'm so watching this so in regret. But anyway, but he... You know, guys, okay, here's your sushi piece, and looks over, and there's the dominatrix, and she just starts smashing with her fist every single piece of sushi that comes out, and then he eats it. And the whole time, there's this couple, normal right. couple, sitting at the bar next to him, completely, like, not, like, very Japanese, very, like, we're not going to say anything, we're going to pretend this isn't happening, and it's a very, very funny scene.
Oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
But then, so to me, I think I was sated by the different dominatrixes coming in, just kind of because I got the vibe that they all had different abilities or different positions.
Well, yeah, they all gave them all like titles. Like, sure. There's the Whip Queen, and there's the Queen of Voices who can do impressions, and the Saliva Queen who I could have lived without. there's a point I was like, okay, now you're really making me glad that I didn't order food during the screening.
Sure.
But it's very funny. It falls into that sort of weird Mortal Kombat-ish way that the movie ends up at.
Right.
You know, where they're yeah. all like this mystical almost organization.
Well, and you get, I mean, more like the Mortal Kombat video games, you get that scene at the beginning at the merry-go-round where you have the squares with the characters in them.
Right.
And you go, I'm going to play as every single one of these before we stop.
I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah, you're totally right.
I start seeing them show up as the movie goes on. I go, okay, we're missing these two based on what was covering their breasts because I could not tell them apart otherwise.
Is it weird to see that Warner Brothers was a production company behind this?
Crazy.
Isn't that
strange to
bizarre?
Me.
They're distributing it in Japan, and Drafthouse Films is distributing it, unsurprisingly, is distributing it here in America. Part of the reason being that the director, Hitoshi Matsumoto, is a personal favorite of the owner of the Alamo Drafthouse, Tim League, who showed us one of his early films, Big Man Japan, years ago at Fantastic Fest, and I personally am not a fan of that film.
Okay. I haven't seen it.
It's the idea being is this guy who used to be like an Ultraman type guy,
okay.
where he can spontaneously grow into a huge dude and then fight kaiju. It's like a mockumentary about his life,
okay.
post-retirement type of thing. And it takes fucking forever for anything to happen in that movie. I mean, so boring until the last 20 minutes. But Tim League loved the shit out of that movie. Loved it so much. He wouldn't shut up about it for like 2 years. And I was like, okay, man, you love it. I respect that. You really loved it. But now that he's like, you know what? I don't care what this guy does. I love it. And sure enough, they're bringing this one, which is, you know, I've only seen two movies by this guy. But, you know, he's bringing this one out. And this is the one I would say... Yeah, you might want to, despite the, like, going, I don't want to see a movie about a bunch of dominatrixes and S&M shit. Yeah, you kind of probably want to do check this one out, actually.
I agree. I mean, I think, for me, I loved the look of the film. I like the grayed-out tones, really solemn, somber kind of visuals that went along with an absolutely insane premise and the ending, even. I mean, just the fact that the film... attempted anything subdued, I give so much credit because it makes what does happen so much more over the top.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I thought it just drove everything home in all the right ways for me.
And it is so utterly over the top.
I mean,
wow, this is some really crazy, which I'm so tempted to describe sequences in this
film
that I don't want to because I don't want to take away from you the just like look of like your you know, your jaw agape watching it going, what the fuck? That is its own kind of pleasure.
I feel like there's a special feature somewhere waiting to be made for the DVD of this that's just video of the audience while the film's going
on. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know? And all the flies that fly into their mouth while they're like, their jaws are wide open. It is not... well, let's go to final thoughts.
Sure.
Michael, go ahead.
All right. Well, I mean, so no secret, this conversation has been leading up to me saying that I love this movie.
I get that.
Crazy about this movie. But I mean, it's totally up my alley. It's got a really, really deliberate visual style, which I always applaud in a film. And I think that to take the subject matter akin to Rubber, like you said, which I think is a perfect parallel to this film, where you come up with a subject that's just absolutely ridiculous and you play it out like it is the most serious movie you've ever made. Until the end when you go, no, I'm joking. It's actually about a bunch of dominatrixes.
Yeah. Utter absurdism.
Right. And I love it. I think that there's courage in that. I think that there's a really strong level of self-awareness to be able to go from something like, my wife is a vegetable and I don't know how long before my son will ever see her again, to flying exploded dominatrixes. That's just a thing.
I want to play the game of this.
Sure. Oh, yeah. There's at least an arcade game, if not a full video game,
right,
for this movie. but, I mean, I loved it so far. It's, I mean, so...
Happy ending him!
So far for me, this is the best thing I've seen in 2015. I mean, it's, you know, not been hard.
Yeah, but it's we're not even through the first month.
But it's way up there.
All right,
I will make a point of letting you know when something beats R100 this year.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
So I
look forward to
that.
The R100 scale.
Yeah, that said, I'm going to give this 10 out of 10.
Oh my God.
10 out of 10.
You really did love this.
Smashed pieces of sushi.
Okay. Now, I can't say I liked it quite to the same degree you did. I really love that movies like this exist. I can't tell you how much I love that movies like this exist. That we live in a world where not only movies like this exist, but they're being distributed in America
right.
for us to see.
Right.
Wow, was I born in the right time that I get to see the shit. I'm like so excited that this is something that is going to occasionally pop onto our radar, that this is an option for you to watch a movie like this. I don't think it's even anywhere near my favorite of the Japanese complete bug nut weirdo films, but I think this is maybe a great entry point for people into bug nut weirdo
That's
Japanese
probably
films.
Me or close to me.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Well, I'm gonna loan you Visitor Q before
yeah,
you leave tonight
okay.
by Mike, which is
perfect.
Like one of the absolute top mm-hmm. notch of
I mean,
the WTF Japanese.
I've seen a handful of Mike. I've seen Ichi. I mean,
yeah.
I'm aware.
You saw Gozu.
Yeah.
Yeah. You need to see Visitor Q.
Okay.
Because there's a scene where a guy, after watching his mother have sex with somebody else, where he's milking her, the guy having sex with her, like her boobs, to the point where the whole kitchen fills up with like 3 feet worth of milk, that the son starts swimming through her breast milk and drinking it and masturbating.
Oh my God, so good.
Yeah, okay, so, you know, you can tell, guy listeners, if that sounds like something that you're not just like, why would I ever watch that, to like, I find myself curiously interested to see how that plays out, then maybe this as well.
Yeah,
100
totally.
Is your type of thing. But, you know, like I said, this is tame by comparison. It's still pretty goddamn funny, pretty well done. I can't help but recommend this strongly to people who already like this sort of thing, and cautiously to those who have no idea what they're in for. I'm going to give this 7 out of 10... nipple clamps, because, you know, it seems like there should have been more nipple
clamps. There should
clamps.
Have been way more nipple
there
clamps.
There was not as many nipple right. clamps here as there should have been.
Right. No, I agree. There was, however, plenty of saliva.
There was way too much saliva. Holy shit. Holy spit.